Next speaker is Arlen Pepper.
Thanks, Chairman. I had a statement prepared, but I think I've torn it up listening to everything that's been said this morning today. At risk of going native in my own country, the paraphrase is George Orwell, great George Orwell, I'll tell you a slight anecdote. And once upon a time in 1988, after the signing of the Good Friday Agreement, I was an angry young man. My argument went something like this. They got to bring me up now. And, you know, that was before I actually grew up again. I was never educated in Irish history at school, because I had the Protestant state school, where we talked about the Tudors. But actually, things haven't really moved on since Joe the Lost Day. I chose at that particular time to take that argument up with the wrong person, and the late Bobby Gurley, who a lot of you will know. I'll not tell you where the conversation happened. Bobby sat back and his wife sort of said, "Now, Bobby, you know, this young man's, you know, never going to get through to him." And Bobby, right, but actually, the important thing was, he gave me enough rope, by which I then hanged myself. But it troubled me, because talking to a number of other people from trade union background, by the end of the sort of conversion over that summer period, when I went to university in Coleraine, we were down here protesting. We weren't protesting about flags. Protesting about cuts to education, higher education in the UK. Probably the only time I've ever protested in Northern Ireland about something. But that was completely, you know, cross-sectarian, anti-sectarian, whatever you want to talk about. Students marching, sort of along her riffraff, protesting about something that actually mattered. And, you know, it was a small gathering, it wasn't the proportions of May Day. But the important thing there is that actually, to me, that was important, leaving aside the constitutional issue. And actually, in all the time that I grew up here, and I haven't lived here regularly in a few years, but I'm still trying to educate myself about what this is all about here in Northern Ireland. What is it about the Protestant working class that makes some people join in with their brothers and sisters on the trade union circuit and others turn to protesting about a flag? And I haven't got an answer to that, but, you know, if you read further on this issue, about 10 years ago, another great friend, Billy Mitchell, who I work with on conflict transformation initiatives, wrote a piece called Nationalist Euphoria, Unionist Despondency, and I think it's been republished on the Blanket Is No More, sadly, the website run by Anthony McIntyre, carried to me, but I would urge you to have a read of it, because what he was actually talking about is still relevant today. I just want to read very, very quickly a piece from that. He said, "Personally speaking, I believe that Sinn Féin's preoccupation with flags and emblems has more to do with wanting to remove any visible sign of their failure to break the link with Britain than it has to do with Republican ideals. Having lost the constitutional battle, they have resorted to agitating for the removal of the symbols that remind them of their failure." I'm also reminded, reading that, of some things that Brendan Hughes talked about when he was asked by the infamous Boston College project, Belfast project, whatever it was dressed up to be at that time, what he thought about Republicans celebrating the ceasefire. And he said, well, it was triumphalism, it was victory, 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 all I said, I'm paraphrasing, all I saw was defeat, defeat, defeat. So what I really want to talk very, very briefly about, and it would be in considerable depth, as we've heard from two speakers here, who basically, I'm going to echo some of what they've said. What I want to talk about is the stereotyping of loyalism. Now, there are academics in this room who have railed against that, Graham Spencer notably, Jim McCauley and others. But loyalists emerge as caricatures. They emerge as figures of fun. They emerge as feckless. They emerge as, undesirables. you know, and they're constantly dehumanized. Some of the names, just to read them off, in fact, I know a few of them. But anyway, I'll employ a few names that are used frequently in the press. The Red Tops and the Main, the Beast, the Mexican, the Doris Day, and, of course, this is encapsulated by that great symbol of a dog wearing a t-shirt. Now, portraying working class as bigoted, sectarian, you know, tracksuit-wearing scum has political repercussions. I don't think that's particularly accurate, but, you know, judging by the reaction to the Stephen Dolan show a while back, if you're on Twitter, you will know what people thought of some of the working class people that turned up in the audience of that. And the comments were nothing short of a disgrace. So the caricatures, they've been demonised. These things have been written about in the past by Billy Mitchell. So, you know, it's not new. But what we need to do, I think, is to challenge some stereotypes. Not to see things in caricature, and actually add a little bit more complexity to it and to tease it a little bit more. The other stereotype that comes up is not in relation to paramilitaries necessarily, or those who may be seen come from those areas where paramilitaries are, you know, roam free, is the privileged prod stereotype. It comes out time and time and time again. It's been challenged by academics, it's been challenged by commentators on the left, but it's a stereotype, it's out there. It's a perception, it's not reality, for the reasons that Billy outlined earlier. So I think there's an obligation there from people like me, from academics, to actually look at this thing a little bit more dispassionately, to challenge it, to keep challenging it, to remind people that actually that there is much more to it than that. And really, that's one of the things that I hope that today we'll begin to do, is just to try and bring away those caricatures and to really see the reality of things, to see that actually Protestants can be progressive. And dare I say it, I'm not going to shut it down by a few people in the audience here, they can be socialist too. And I think that not only do we have to bring in the East-West dimension that Gareth mentioned this morning, and see them as part of the British working class. I know you'll not agree with me, several of you know, but that's the way we need to look at it. So there are three things I think that academics can do. This is, I began with Orwell, I'll finish with Christopher Hitchens. He advocated that public intellectuals of, I don't see very many in Northern, I don't see very many in the UK, but anyway, he advocated that there's three things that they should do. Not all academics, by the way, are public intellectuals.
Intellectual.
He advocated three things. The first, survey the present through the optic of the historian. Now, by doing that, when I'm speaking as a historian, you add complexity, contingency, you add a little bit more detail, okay? You don't go in for the stereotypes, you bust myths. I can't see Malaga here today, he's a fellow myth buster, Malaga Dory. But you do bust myths, and that's the thing that, you know, if you're treating this as a specialty, you have to do. Survey the past through the optic of the historian. The second thing is to look at the past from the perspective of the living. So actually, these things, what you say, have real effects. If you're perpetuating the myth that all Protestants are privileged, you know, and again, I always think when I say privileged broad, I always think of Billy Mitchell's piece, The Privileged Broad and the Travelling Tinker. Have anybody ever read it? Great piece. And actually, he's talking about Tuppence. He had been looking down at Tuppence. If anybody's read it, you'll know what I mean by that. They have real consequences because people believe that, even though it's a perception. And the third thing is that culture and language by which we address these issues should be, you should draw upon the equipment of the internationalist rather than parochial, narrow-mindedness that actually pervades a lot of commentary in this country, a lot of punditocracy, a lot of blogosphere comments. I wrote a piece not too long ago that dared to suggest that the Progressive Unionist Party was a broad church, because I'd actually interviewed people who said I'm a socialist, I'm agnostic, I'm working class. There are a number of identities there. People lambasted me for that and said, how could that possibly be? They're all fascists. Now, the person saying that has no idea what fascism is. Fascism sends people to their deaths. You know, and on an industrial scale, fascism is something that you should equate with Hitler's Germany. Okay, thanks. But those terms are used and abused. So just to go back, I said I'd finish on Hitchens, but he's not the very many people's taste in here, I'm sure. I'll finish with Orwell and an essay entitled The Politics of the English Language, written in 1946. He said that the word fascism, this is 1946, has now no meaning except insofar as it signifies something not desirable. Similarly, he complained that the term democracy was being abused, as were other terms, because there was actually no universally accepted definition of democracy. Same can be said for another word, the big T, terrorism. We disagree over these issues. We add complexity, certainly academics do. We try to assess these things, keep them, keep our analysis as long as possible. But the phraseology that's used, I think, needs to be clarified. And, you know, we don't have an understanding of what a loyalist is, but I started off by saying today that to me it's something pejorative, and it's used to pigeonhole people. So that you actually stop them from realising their potential, their ambition in life, you narrow their horizons. How are they ever going to be equipped or equip themselves with the tools of an internationalist to look at what's going on here without those blinkers that we've been talking about the constitution, about other issues that actually don't have a real impact on people's lives, certainly in socioeconomic terms. So I'll leave that there.
Okay.